Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We are joined now on Hardline by Sweet Home Schools Superintendent Mike Ginestri. Mike, good morning. Thank you for joining us here on this Labor Day weekend. How do you feel?
I'm feeling good. Ready to go on Tuesday to welcome our students back. It's been a busy week, but we're ready to go. Very excited.
There you go. Yeah, the new school year's starting. Do you have those back-to-school jitters like some students may, or do you think, are you strapped in? Are you set?
Absolutely. You know, every year, I think it's more excitement and with the jitters, but it's certainly an exciting time of year. And, you know, we prepare all summer to welcome students back. So next week is just huge for us. We've done a lot of work this summer, and we're excited to open our doors on Tuesday.
Tell me about some of that work. What's new with the district this year?
So we have new start and stop times at the elementary, middle school, and the high school level. So we were making sure that our community is informed on those. Our middle school is more aligned with our high school now. And so last year and many previous years to that, our middle school would get out about 3:55, 4 o'clock. Now it's getting out at 2:40, and that's making a huge difference for a lot of our families because now our middle school hopefully will participate more in extracurriculars after school as well. So that's a big change. Of course, we're getting ready for the cell phone policy at the high school, implementing that. That's been busy communicating that out, having a town hall, making sure that our families are aware of what's happening there. And then the normal stuff, just making sure our buildings are prepared, ready to go. Our buildings and grounds crew has been working around the clock to make sure everything's clean, everything's where it's supposed to be, and drilling everything and just preparing for opening day. So it's been fun this summer.
And as you mentioned there, of course, the giant elephant in the room is that this is the first full school year under the bell-to-bell cell phone ban. Walk us through it. What is Sweet Home's plan looking like?
Yeah, so we have had a cell phone ban in UPK through 8 in our district. And so some, you know, our students coming up to the high school are used to the policies in grades UPK through 8. So at the middle school, we had students store their cell phones in lockers. And we're going to continue that now up to the high school. The high school had an open policy. We did not ban cell phones at the high school. But now, of course, with the law, we will be doing that. So our students are going to store their devices in their lockers, and they have to be turned off throughout the day. We're keeping the policy simple and something that they're used to.
So you said in the lockers. Are you not using those magnetic pouches that we've seen some districts using?
We are not. No, we feel like they were used to that policy. Like students coming up to the high school, we really feel like they were used to that policy in the middle school, and it was strongly enforced in our middle school. So we wanted a continuity with the policy and our practices and procedures, and we felt that this was the best way to do it because many of our students are used to not having their cell phones throughout the day.
How much flexibility do you think there's going to be? It's the start of the year. I'm sure just because it's a new rule, that's probably going to bring some challenges, I would imagine. Is there any room of maybe some slight adjustments during the year if you see some change you might want to make?
Absolutely. So when the law was announced, we put a task force together made up of administrators, teachers, parents. And then I held some meetings with students about what they wanted to see out of the new law and the new policy. And so part of that work was to remain flexible and continue the work of the task force. So they're going to meet 4 or 5 times throughout the year to see how things are going and make adjustments as needed. But I think on opening day, we really want to get the message that this is the law. You cannot carry your smart device, your personal smart device with you bell to bell in our hallways. And we're going to enforce it. And it's going to be, you know, I think it's going to be an adjustment for some students at our high school. I think our middle school and elementaries will be fine because they weren't allowed there anyway. But it's got to be enforced starting on day one because it's the law.
There's lots of reasons for the ban, be it distractions. I think that's probably the biggest one. Another one might be bullying. Do you think that, as you mentioned, K through 8 already has cell phones have not been allowed. Do you think that's contributed in the district to maybe less incidents of maybe kids getting suspended or detention, just delinquency in general?
You know, it's funny you say it that way. What I have witnessed is the mental health side of it, right? And what I mean by that is the impact social media is having on our kids, whether it's promoting like an addictive type of behavior because they can't get off their cell phones, or some of the negative connections they've made. And a lot what I've seen at the middle school anyway is things that are happening maybe at night when the school's not in session that come into the building the next day. And so that's still going to be a concern because obviously we aren't with our students 24/7, but instances throughout the day, we don't really see those at the middle school because they're not allowed to have them. Now at the high school, you know, I've talked to a lot of students, and as they mature and understand what the social media is about a little bit, it's a little less of some of that impact. And so what I'm hoping to see is that students understand that from a mental health point of view, it's better if we're off our phones and we're not addicted and our head's not in them all the time. It's better to make more social connections and person-to-person connections. Sweet Home has joined a nationwide lawsuit against social media companies because of the negative impact they have on students. And there's times where it seems like, you know, all of our discipline problems can be traced back to a cell phone. And that's got to change. And so we're happy to see this come through. We're happy to be a part of that lawsuit. And I think anything that can help our students from a mental health standpoint, you know, we're all in favor.
It actually is pretty incredible now that I think about it. I graduated high school in 2017. Mm-hmm. And thinking back to the stuff that happened involving phones in the school then.
Sure.
Kids taking pictures of each other, posting them to Snapchat, posting them on Twitter. There were Twitter accounts, such and such district gossip. I mean, do you agree that this is just, it's long overdue?
Long overdue, 100%. And, you know, it's easy to say a lot of things and do a lot of things behind a screen or behind a computer, but there's always a reality to it when you hit that send button. And some of our kids and all of us, even, you know, we regret when we hit that send button about the things that we've published or put out there. And so I think, you know, hopefully this is just the tip of the iceberg, and this ban in schools starts a conversation nationally and around the world about the impact social media has been having on the negatives side. There's good things. You know, we get information out there quickly, put it in people's hands real fast. You know, we share, you know, some personal stories on there that people may want to hear, and we connect with people that haven't connected with in years. So there's positives to it. But I'm hoping that this conversation keeps going because there's a lot of negative that can come with it as well, whether it's online bullying or harassment or just, you know, a lot of negative things that are out there. So anything we can do to keep the conversation going, Sweet Home's going to be a part of that. And I'm proud to say that you know, that our policy is good, but this is not the end of that conversation.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And it's almost as if the state, your district, is getting ahead of where things are going, mm-hmm. because we're seeing stuff now where kids are streaming just their regular day lives. And people are watching it on app. There's this new thing called Kick where people are just streaming and people are watching what other people do. This is essentially keeping that out of the classroom, right?
Yeah, and that's critical. We can't have that in the classroom because, you know, there's a lot of learning that needs to take place. We're preparing students for a life after high school. And they have to be ready, knowledgeable. You know, we're teaching social skills and mental health and awareness and social and emotional awareness. And so if you're constantly in a phone or you're more concerned, you know, about videoing yourself throughout the day and publishing that, then what's taking place in your core classes, you know, that's a troubling shift. So, you know, we're doing everything we can to combat that. And because, you know, we as administrators and teachers and educators, you know, we have a big job to do and we want to make sure our kids are prepared for life after high school.
Is there also going to be a policy for teachers or are they going to be able to have their devices on them?
They will have their devices on them. However, we are asking everybody, not just teachers, but administrators, faculty, staff, to model good behavior throughout the building. So we want to model what good behavior with your smart device looks like. And so, you know, there's no ban for adults, but we are asking them to model it and be a good model for our students.
And it's unfortunately impossible to talk about this issue after what happened earlier this week on Wednesday in Minneapolis at a Catholic school where children were killed by a gunman. Yep. When you first heard the news, did it give you pause? Did you maybe think within the context of the cell phone ban about it? And have you thought about how an active shooter situation or any other type of emergency really would be handled? Yep. If kids don't have immediate access to their phones?
Yeah, so absolutely. You know, safety is our number one priority, and it's my number one priority as a superintendent. I think every superintendent would say that. So my heart goes out to those students in Minneapolis and their families and the entire community, because it's just the nightmare, the thing that you absolutely don't want to happen or have to go through. You know, sometimes it's, you know, in our plans, we have, things in place that will reconnect students with their families. God forbid that ever happened or, you know, and we practice those things. We have drills that we're going to continue to practice, throughout the year to make sure, you know, when these things happen, I try and read up on them and see what happened and what took place. And obviously it seems like social media played a big role in this, as well. So, you know, we read and study and figure out if we have gaps anywhere. And if we have gaps, we close those gaps. But, you know, we do have the scenarios or things in place where we would reconnect students with families while keeping them safe. Sometimes, you know, it's very difficult for our students to, you know, when they need to be in safety mode, we want them off their cell phones because they need to pay attention to directions. They need to maybe stay quiet during a certain period of time. And so there's a lot that goes into it, but yeah, we study it all the time. And, you know, our safety committee at Sweet Home is made up of outstanding individuals that study these things and look at every scenario possible to keep our kids safe.
And just wondering, do your classrooms still have like a typical landline that a teacher might use, just like call the office? Okay, so that can also, I imagine, be used to contact. Okay. All that said, let's move on to more positive things, hopefully. So you've been at the forefront of the electric bus rollout.
Yes.
Since that legislation is coming, we know that you've spoken with WBEM before about your preparations. What's the status right now since we last spoke to you some weeks ago? And are some of those buses, are they already in service? Are they rolling out this year?
Yes. So So we got three electric buses last year, and with them came their charging stations, and they are currently in service, and they will be on the road this year. Our attitude towards the mandate has always been, we have a mandate in place. How can we minimize the impact on our taxpayers? Because we know we're going to have to flip our fleet. We know that it's going to be tremendously expensive to do that. How can we go about this? And we did two things. Number one, we knew we had time, so we started right away when the mandate came through that we wanted to put plans in place. And we worked with some partners to do an electrification plan of our transportation center. And we needed that plan in order to go out and get grant funding for as much money as we possibly can to help flip our fleet. So we started pretty much from day one on the mandate because we didn't want to come up to 2032 or whatever the date is and say, all right, now we need to buy 65 electric buses. That would have been a tremendous burden on our taxpayers and caused a lot of grief and controversy for sure. So we have three now. We have eight more on the way over the next year and a half, I believe. And all of those come with charging stations. The other ones, to flip our entire fleet of about 60 buses, we're going to continue to look for grant money, whether it's through NYSERDA or the EPA, which that grant money is still available to us. And we're going to propose in the next capital project that we have to put to make sure that the facility has enough electric running through it to handle charging 60 buses. So we got a lot of plans in place. We feel like we're in a good place. There's some unknown about grant money, especially from the federal government coming for this transition, but we're trying to tap every dollar we can. So far, Luke, the nice thing about it is that we've paid for these three buses. We've got eight more on the way. And our total costs right now are right because of the grants and the funding that we've received are actually under what it would cost to buy diesel. So we're doing really well. We're proud of our plan. I want to, our board has been super supportive, which is also helpful. And we're going to keep plugging away, moving forward.
There you go, doing the legwork early. And there is one other question I want to ask you here, because this was a big story a couple of weeks ago, that the principal of Sweet Home High School resigned. Mm-hmm. There had been a vote of no confidence some time ago. What's the process like of finding a new principal, and where's that at?
Yeah, so we are currently looking for a high school principal. We have an interim principal in place. He's been working around the clock to get school ready and open. And so right now we have a posting out there, and we're looking, and we need to find the right candidate for that job. It's a huge job. Any high school principal in any district is very high profile, very high stress, but very rewarding at the same time. So we're looking for the right individual. We're working with all of our stakeholder groups in the district to find that person, and we're excited to move forward.
Well, maybe that lucky person is out there listening. Let's see.
send me a resume. That'd be great.
There you go. All right, Mike, thank you so much for joining us, and enjoy the rest of your long weekend, and good best of luck this school year.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me anytime.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.